Almost every Monday afternoon for the past 3 months, I've spent nearly 4 hours Zooming with 5 other UCC ministers from the Southwest Conference, reading and reflecting and sharing and listening and learning and talking about and taking in all kinds of information on the subject of racism in our country. Over the 12 weeks of this class, under the leadership of 3 very skilled facilitators from an organization called ASDIC Metamorphosis, which stands for Anti-Racism Study Dialogue Circles, the 6 of us are working our way through a very demanding curriculum with readings and videos and exercises that inform and guide our conversation. Not only is it demanding in terms of time commitment and intellectual capacity, it's been a long time since I've taken a class like this, but it's also demanding in terms of heart capacity, because it's hard to see or to begin to see in more depth the historic and ongoing realities of discrimination and oppression that exist in our country based solely on race. It's uncomfortable to see the depth and the breadth of the ingrainedness of racism in our country. It's overwhelming to see the pervasiveness of it. It's painful to see the intentionality of it on a historic and systemic level. And it's humbling to begin to honestly acknowledge the ways that I and all of us participate in it. And I think it's especially hard for those of us who are white Americans and who consider ourselves to be good people, who consider ourselves generally well-intentioned, and who believe that as individuals, we're not racist, that we don't discriminate against people based on the color of their skin, but try hard to treat all people the same. It's especially hard for those of us who see ourselves in that group to acknowledge our privilege, to acknowledge the power that we, in fact, have simply by virtue of the fact that we were born white. It's not easy to acknowledge that we live within a society that has been set up historically, purposely, to give us who are white advantages, while intentionally disadvantaging those who are not. It's a hard conversation, and it's an extremely complex issue. And there are no easy answers, and there is no quick fix. But it's a conversation that needs to be had. So what does this have to do with Advent and grief and lament? I promise there's a connection, and we will get there. But for just a moment, back to racism. You can't talk about racism without talking about power. Who's got it and who doesn't got it? You can't talk about racism without talking about fear. And a lot of that is fear of losing power. You can't talk about racism without talking about domination and control, using domination to control in order to maintain power. And you can't talk about racism without talking about violence and death and grief and lament. Power, fear, domination, control, violence, death, grief, lament. These words, sadly, describe significant pieces of the reality of the world in which we live. And not only around the issue of race, of course, not by any means, and not just in our country, but around the world, as we are all too well aware. Power, fear, domination, control, violence, death, grief, lament. Even more sadly, perhaps, these words and the human experiences and behaviors that they represent are not new to humanity. Despite what it feels like sometimes, I don't think we humans are getting worse as time goes on. More and more power hungry, less and less able to get along, more willing to kill and destroy each other out of fear and a desire to control. Sadly, these words seem to represent behaviors and experiences that are timeless. They go hand in hand, generation after generation after generation, with our existence as humans. We see that throughout human history. And as people of faith, we see it throughout the Bible. And we see it in our story for today. We see power, fear, domination, control, violence, death, grief, and lament. Herod, as Joyce pointed out, as the king, had the power. And when the wise men came in search of the child who had been born king of the Jews, Herod felt fear. He was afraid that this new king might steal his power, that this new king might cause him to lose the control that he had and enjoyed having over the people around him. And so he used his power to dominate those whom he perceived as a threat. He used his power to demand that violence be committed against them. He used his power to bring the death of those whom he was afraid. And in this case, they were babies. They were children. All the children in and around Bethlehem who were 2 years old and under, the story tells us. As a result of this barbaric expression of power, motivated purely by fear, that resulted in the deaths of innocent children, there was understandably grief and lament, wailing and loud lamentation, parents weeping for their children, refusing to be consoled for the violent, tragic, and completely unnecessary deaths of their children. Power, fear, domination, control, violence, death, grief, and lament. That is the world into which Jesus was born. And that's the world in which we still live today. And yet here we are with Christmas approaching. Christmas, which we are told time and time and time again in songs and TV shows and movies and advertisements and social media, is the most wonderful time of the year. If I thought ahead, I might have asked the McCabes to break into song. Christmas is oozing, we are told, with joy and light and laughter and generosity and abundance. And it is a wonderful time of year. There is joy and light and laughter. There is generosity and abundance. There are parties and Christmas carols and gifts. We do gather with loved ones, causing our hearts to glow. We gather in our faith communities and our spirits rejoice. And yet, surrounding all of that, casting a shadow on all of that, there is the reality of power struggles and fear and control and violence and death and grief and lament, also in abundance. So how do we hold all of that in these days of Advent? Can we, as people of faith, allow space for all of it without allowing one set of experiences to crowd out the other? Can we somehow acknowledge both realities, not having to pay attention to one while denying the other? Because this world in which we live is broken. There is injustice and pain and suffering. And it's also beautiful. There is joy and majesty and gloriousness. We humans are also broken. We lust after power and control. We sacrifice others to get what we want. We deny our inherent worth and the worth of others. And we are also beautiful. We seek goodness and justice. We're willing to sacrifice ourselves for others. We're capable of tremendous love, giving and receiving. Can we recognize that the brokenness and all that's beautiful are part of what it means to be human? That it all seems to be part of the human experience, part of human existence, for good or for bad? Can we grieve what we have lost, allow space for sadness and pain, and cry out in lament to God for the injustices in our lives and in the world, while at the same time we prepare for the coming of Christ, anticipating the joy of Christmas, readying ourselves to receive the light that came into the darkness into which Jesus was born, the light that is still so desperately needed in the world in which we are living today? Jesus was born into and lived in a world where power and fear and domination and control and violence and death and grief and lament were ever present, no different than the world that we are still living in today. Jesus knows what those things are. He knows the suffering of our lives. He knows our hearts. And in the midst of all of that, he comes to us with full awareness of all of that. He came so that the world then and the world ever since then could know and experience grace, God's grace and mercy and justice and peace and hope and love. He came so that the world might know and experience God. Jesus was born in the midst of deep darkness so that he might show God's light. His birth didn't do away with the darkness of those times, nor does it do away with the darkness that's present today. Nor does his birth mean that we somehow can magically deny the reality of the darkness, that we pretend that the pain and suffering and brokenness in the world doesn't exist. Instead, we can rejoice in the face of all of that, that Jesus still comes. In the midst of our grief and sadness, he still comes. In the face of our weeping and our laments, he still comes. In the presence of all that is broken in the world and in us, Jesus still comes to be born among us, to be with us, to show us another way of being, to show us God's love in a way that we just might grasp. The darkness doesn't go away because of his birth. We can't pretend that it doesn't exist. We have to see it and acknowledge it and feel it and know in the midst of all of that, that Jesus was born and is waiting to be born again in us today. Amen.